So some people say that, well, gee, John has, you know, shifted things around, you know, to a great extent. And he does have that stuff. But the theme of the disciples' incomprehension is still very strong in John. Even though they front load a lot of awareness all the way down the line, they're still basically bozoing their way. And in the upper room, you have this series of questions where Jesus says something and the disciples go, duh, how can this be? And Jesus has to go, you know, and he explains to them. I mean, he probably shouldn't think of him as being irritated, but that's part of this text, is this dialogical character of the teaching. Jesus says these profound things and Thomas or Philip don't get it, and then he has to come back and lead them even more deeply into the truth. So anyway, this is the upper room, and it's the night that Jesus is going to be betrayed. It picks up, you know, at chapter 13, verse 1. In fact, I have a little bit of a theory about that verse. Just take a look back there at 13:1, where John writes, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, because he knew that his hour came, and of course that's a big Johannine concept, the hour finally having arrived, for him to go up out of the world, this world, to the Father. Now, maybe because or after he loved his own, because he loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The thing that interests me here is this term, his own. Because in the prologue, you remember that he came to his own and his own did not receive him, right? I think maybe here there's a juncture, the gospel. Some people divide the gospel into 1 to 12 and then 13 to 21. I think maybe Raymond Brown does it that way. But it's like, okay, now who are his own? It's no longer Israel at large, because they're the ones who have not received him. It's his disciples. His disciples are his own. And now he loves them finally by imparting this teaching to them, and then, of course, after the teaching comes the passion itself. So anyway, some real profound stuff is going on here, some provision for the disciples. So that we can just pick up at 14:1 now. Me tarasestho himon he kardia. We have me plus the present imperative passive, third person singular. Let not, you know, I always translate those third person imperatives with let. So let not your heart be troubled, or go on being troubled. And then two ambiguous verbs after that in terms of their form, pisteuete, twice, which could be present indicative, or it could be present imperative. I think following on the heels of the imperative in the first part of the verse, take these as imperatives also, not in the sense of some sort of command or law, but an invitation. Believe in God and believe in me. I think some, and the translations go all over the map on this. Some say, you believe in God, so they take the first one as indicative, and the second one then, believe also in me, as imperative. And, you know, I suppose you could make a case for either one. But this believing into is this uniquely prominent Johannine way of talking about faith. It's apparently quite striking and not really found elsewhere in with pisteuo. John likes to say it that way, believe into Jesus. I don't know if there is one in particular. Yeah, because John does have a variety. He uses other constructions with pisteuo to also seemingly mean like saving faith. It's not just this construction. So, yeah. But John's language is so flexible that you could probably make it mean something, but I don't know what it is. Verse 2, in the house of my father, monai polai azen. King James, of course, went many mansions. But a monai is a place to stay, a room or a resting place. So in my father's house are many places to rest, many places to stay. E de me, and if not, or otherwise, apon on he mean. this is pretty elliptical. What you have here actually is a contrary to fact conditional sentence, but no verb or subject or actually anything in the first clause. All you have is otherwise. But if you supply, if it were not so, then upon on, I would have said to you. Right? So it's a, and you have to, what you would supply if a verb were there would be an aorist indicative, and then in the protasis or the if part of the clause, and then on plus the aorist indicative in the then part of the clause. So if it were not so, I would have said to you, a dative of indirect object. Now, huti here, because, here's why I would have said it to you, because I am going for this purpose, infinitive of purpose, to prepare a place, dative of advantage, for you. Verse 3, and if I go and prepare a place for you, here we have two aorist subjunctives, poroiomai is passive deponent, so this is the poriutho in verse 3, is the aorist subjunctive passive, but it's deponent. So, active sense, and if I journey, and et toimazo, it could be a future indicative active, first person singular, but because we've got aeon, you realize, we all realize, all God's children realize, that it is in fact an aorist subjunctive active, first person singular, just aeon plus the subjunctive. If I go and prepare a place for you, again I am coming. Maybe give this, in light of the next verb, a futuristic twist. I will come and I will receive you or take you along to myself so that, for this purpose, now we have a locative clause, where I am, also you may be. And it's interesting, you've got a clause within a clause, and the hapu clause, hapu doesn't take the subjunctive, so you've got hapu plus ami, the present indicative. But the verb of the hina clause, the main verb of the hina clause, is the eta at the very end of the verse. So that's subjunctive, okay? So that where I am, also you may be. By the way, this is a great text, of course, and it's often preached at funerals. But the thing that struck me one time some years ago is that the way I'd heard it preached, and probably had preached it myself, would be as if the person, the Christian who had died, was already in the heavenly dwelling place. And that is not exactly what this text says, because Jesus says, I'll come back and take you to myself. So the heavenly mansions, if you will, of the King James, he's talking about the last day. He's talking about the parousia. See? Now, of course, there's still the comfort that the soul of the believer is with Christ, to use Paul's phrase in Philippians, or in paradise, Luke 23. But I wonder if we even ought to adapt the way we talk about the death of a Christian and speak of it more as rest rather than, you know, my heavenly home. Because, you know, the saints under the altar in Revelation are still saying, how long? You know, it's not like they're unhappy, as Howard Tepker, the only time he ever told a joke in class, said long ago, it's not like they're up there saying, I ain't got nobody. That was a joke, see? Right. But, we all kind of went, did Dr. Tepker just tell a joke? That was great. But this is talking about the last day, right? I mean, this is the hope that Jesus holds. So even here in John, where, if you will, realized eschatology is stronger than any of the Gospels. It's so strong that Jesus says, I am the resurrection. He who lives and believes in me will never die, right? I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff. Even here, there's future eschatology, and this text has it. So I will come and I will paralemsomai you to myself for this purpose so that where I am also you may be. Yeah, Paul. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like God's keeping it there.
Right, right. And it's to a living hope that you're born again. Right, yeah. Exactly, exactly. So it's not uncertain, but it does sort of assume that we're looking forward to that day as opposed to just becoming corpses, as opposed to just becoming disembodied spirits or something, you know. That's what 2 Corinthians 5 is all about, although I don't understand that very well either. Verse 4, and where I am going, where I am hypogoing to, oideta, you know the way. Oida is this perfect form that has a present meaning. So not you have known, but you know the way. And now we have Thomas the straight man, verse 5. Thomas says to him, Lord, Kyria, uk oidamen, we do not know, pu, where you are going. How, pos, are we able, dinamatha, to know the way? Here's the, again, it's a perfect infinitive active in form, eidenai. The oida becomes, outside the indicative mood, aid becomes the stem. But again, it just simply has a present meaning. So how are we able to know the way? And now Jesus answers and leads them farther into the teaching. It's really a nice feature of John. I mean, he gives them some, and then they don't understand, and then he gives them more, okay? Although with some texts, it's like it's fire hose delivery, you know, like in John 6, where he just keeps pouring it on. But Jesus says to him in verse 6, I am the way, one of the great ego emes, of course. And the real punch to these statements is in the predicate nominative, not particularly in the ego eimi, although that's a very elevated thing to say in and of itself, but I am the way. This is realized. Okay, here it is. Already, all you need is me because I am the way in myself and the truth, a big concept in John, of course, and the life. Udes, no one comes to the Father, eime, except through me. And then verse 7. Let's see. If you have known me, also my Father, you will know. And from now on, you know him, and you have seen him. So we've moved into a deeper level here. Not only does Jesus assert that they know the way that he's going because he is the way, but now he ratchets it up another step, and he says, if you have known me, you will also know my Father. And from now on, you know him, or maybe you will know him, and you have seen him. Philip now steps forward. And again, it's just ascending intensity of teaching here, really profound stuff. Philip says to him, Kyria, deixon, you mean, the aorist imperative active, second person singular, from deiknimi. One of the signs of the fall is the presence of me verbs in Greek, but this is aorist is okay. Edeixa is pretty regular. Show to us the Father, and arche hemin. It is sufficient for us. Okay? So that'll be good enough. Show us the Father. Jesus says to him, verse 9. Now here's an interesting textual variant. Tus uto chrono. If you check out the textual apparatus, you can see that some pretty heavy-duty witnesses, actually. The Bodmer Papyri, P66, and these new glasses are great. I can actually read this stuff. 75, the first corrector of Sinaiticus, Alexandrinus, Vaticanus, Corydathi, etc., etc., all read the accusative, which makes better sense here, actually, because the accusative, who remembers, normally expresses what relation to time. Anybody remember? Yeah, it answers the question, how long? Accusative of extent. And dative normally answers just simply when, right? But in the New Testament, so as with so many other sort of classical rules, it's getting fudged over. So the more difficult reading would clearly be the dative, I think, and probably why it should be read. But you can still translate it. For so great a time with you I am, and you have not known me, Philip? So you still don't understand the implications of who I am. Now Jesus says, in a first century Palestinian context, absolutely breathtaking statement. Ha heorakos eme, the one who has seen me, heoraken ton patera, has seen the Father. And of course, this is a major theme throughout John, is this unity of the Father and the Son. We'll get more of that as we read on. You know, if there's one heresy that sort of appeals to me, And I'd probably go deeply into it unless, if it didn't have all these bothersome Old Testament people walking around, is Christomonism. You could almost become a Christomonist, you know, by certain passages in the New Testament. But there's this other part of the canon, and so I have to pay at least lip service to, what's his name over here, the representative of the Holy Spirit. How do you say, show to me the Father? Expecting a positive answer, I think you believe, don't you, that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? This interpenetration, you know, this inseparability. The words which I am saying to you right now, from myself I do not speak, but the Father, hapater en emoi menon, the Father remain. Boy, how would I do this? But the Father, because he remains in me, does his works. Is that right? Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, while remaining in me, or because he remains in me, right. Notice that Jesus has shifted from words to works now. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Otherwise, ademe, we've had that before. This is interesting. On account of the works themselves, believe. So Jesus does that several places in John. He says, if you won't believe my words, believe my works. Believe the things that I have done. And that dovetails into the theme of testimony and the signs of Jesus and so forth. Here is a place where, Christian proclamation can hook into the fact that, like, 4th century B.C. Palestine, 20th century Americans live in an incurably religious environment. You know, there are some hardcore atheists, but most people, the average Joe on the street, is a religious person. He thinks that there is a God. He might even be willing to call God Father, although that's kind of going out of vogue in our politically correct day. And so you can say to this person, okay, fine, you're right, there is a God, there is a Father. But to see him, to know him, is to know Jesus. So let me tell you about Jesus. I mean, it's kind of an entree into a natural religiosity. But very, very offensive, because this is an exclusive claim. No one comes to the Father except through me. And then verse 12, I think, is included. Truly, truly, I say to you, the one who believes in me, the works which I am doing, that one also, kakenas, is kai and ekenas slammed together, that one also will do, and a greater thing of these, comparative genitive, and a greater thing than these he will do, because I to the Father am going. What does this mean? Well, a traditional way of dealing with that is to rely on the fact that mezona is singular, a greater thing than these, or something greater than these. And I checked this out. I read Leon Morris, Mr. Steady Eddie on John, and he quotes somebody else approvingly that what's really the greater thing is more conversions, okay? That more people are converted through Jesus' disciples than he himself converted. Otherwise, I don't know what to make of this. I mean, in what sense do we do greater works than Jesus did? I mean, I can't think of the last time I raised somebody from the dead who's been dead for 4 days. So we have to somehow, it's because Jesus is going to the Father, and of course we know from the upper room that because he goes to the Father, he'll send the Holy Spirit, right? And so it's this operative power of the Holy Spirit and that effect which is the thing which is greater than the erga which Jesus himself has done. So a promise tacked on to the end. I don't know why they tacked it on. Nestle Alan, as you see, puts verse 12 with verses 13 to 14 and answers to prayer, which makes sense to me. But so some great theology. You could even preach the text in a way, in such a way as to start with an initial invitation to insight, and then try, just as Jesus does, to lead people deeper into seeing the profundity of the oneness of the Father, and the Son and the sufficiency of the Son, because he who has seen me, Jesus says, has seen the Father. And that's all. That's all you need. So, comments, questions, observations? We have 10 seconds. Huh? That was an observation. They're right. It wasn't particularly pertinent, but what the heck?
First of all, there's still kind of a problem, though, because one of the beliefs of me, the works which I do also he will do.
Yeah, yeah.
So we still are supposed to be doing the works of Jesus.
I know.
We're not doing hell either.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I mean, not even that.
I know.
The greater works,
yeah.
Not even that good.
I know. Right. Well, you point to Acts, you know. God at times gives signs, the kind, and I like to hear these stories. I'm enough of a pietist, you know, I like to hear these stories from the mission field, you know, these inexplicable events that you sort of just have to attribute to, maybe God still does these things today, which obviously we'd want to admit, at least in theory. And, you know, we've all seen things. You wonder if it really was a miracle. There's a couple things I saw that, you know, in pastoral ministry, and I thought, I want to be a careful, you know, skeptic about these things, but I think I just saw a miracle. So, one time this lady, this is great story. I'll end on this, and then you can bring charges against me. Lady taking chemotherapy for cancer treatment, and she called me up, and she says, I want you to come and anoint me with oil. James 5. So my little theological alarm bell's going, beep, 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 beep. So, I go over there, and I talk with her, and one of my members, I said, well, what do you understand by this? I want to know how you're thinking about it. She says, well, I know that it, you know, she was in horrific pain. That was the problem. She just could hardly stand it, and it was from the chemo. And so she said, well, I know that it's, first of all, it's the prayer. There's nothing magical about the oil, but it's just in the Bible, and you're my elder, you know, you're my pastor. So I want you to, I'd like you to anoint me with oil and pray for me and ask that the pain go away. So try as I might, I couldn't think of a good reason not to do it, you know. So I did. I went down to the grocery store and I bought a jar of olive oil. I didn't want to use Crisco or something, you know. That didn't seem right. But olives, you know, Elion. So I bought a jar of olive oil and we prayed and I smeared a little bit on her forehead and we prayed again and I went home and she called me the next morning and she said, guess what? I said, then I heard Rod Serling. You know, I said, what? She said, the pain went away last night. I said, it went away? She said, it went away. I said, how do you feel today? She said, fine. I said, let me go get some more of that olive oil. Yeah. What? Yeah. That was ta erga tu huyutheu, olive oil, the works of the Son of God. Yeah. So that was, to use a technical term, that was kind of cool. That's it. Now we're, another observation, now we're 4 minutes overtime.